Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Coin Review on this second, amazingly, November 2013, first weekend of November. It's still warm outside, thankfully. I'm your host, Cyril Coin, taking you for the next hour as we discuss a busy weekend in the world of sports. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can find me. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald. Hit me up on Facebook.com/Cyril Coin or go to my website, CyrilGeraldQuinn.com, for any archived audio. Got a couple pieces on there on the NBA, which myself and Chad Quinn talked about the NBA preview that's putting posted on there, opening to the NFL show. So if you don't get a chance to catch the show live, certainly catch your favorite archived audio. I had to open with that, of course, the Florida State theme of which has, you know, long been remembered, has been around for a long time now, and that is where we're going to begin the program with Florida State and Miami, and, you know, kind of a take me, you know, a back to the future type game. Florida State coming in number three in the country, Miami coming in number seven in the country. Of course, Florida State dropped one spot after Oregon's win over UCLA, which was expected considering how highly ranked UCLA was. But Florida State comes into this game against Miami as a 22-point favorite. Again, this is the first significant Florida State-Miami game in about 10 years. I mean, you got to go back to the 2004 Orange Bowl when rest in peace, Sean Taylor was still playing for Miami, and Florida State was very good, but wasn't a great team at that point. But that's probably the most, you know, it's been a long time that these two teams have played a meaningful game. And, you know, you think about this rivalry and think about, you know, obviously he grew up on this rivalry. You know, from 1987 to 2004, these teams played in matchups and where both teams were ranked in the top 10, 12 times. I mean, this was the preeminent rivalry in all of college football. This was, for that 12 years. Now, again, it never got to Ohio State, Michigan in terms of as we had a little difficulty there, but we're back. It never got to a point over a course of decades, 3 or 4 decades, of where it's Ohio State, Michigan, okay, or USC, Notre Dame, or in a different type of way, Army, Navy. No, these two teams are not that old historically. But again, in that 18-year period, 87-2004, the level of play and the amount of talent and the intensity and the hatred was just as fierce as those other rivalries in college football. And again, look at all the NFL talent that came out of some of those games. I mean, Deion Sanders, Warren Sapp, Vinny Testaverde, Gino Toretta, Michael Irvin, just to name a few. I mean, Derek Brooks. Just name a few. I mean, it would take the entire show to name, and then some, to name all the All-Americans and all the NFL pros and Hall of Famers that have come from these two, that came from these two universities during the course of that time period. And again, it was not only a battle for national championships, it was a battle for the, you know, championship of Florida, basically, for the state championship. Because though the Florida Gators were a very good team and Story had some good years, won a championship, of course, in 96, you know, Miami and Florida State was it in college football. Every year seemed like it was like a game of the century. And it's, you know, though I don't think Miami, I think, I know Florida State is at that level of certainly one of a handful of teams that can win a championship. Don't think Miami is quite there yet. They're coming fast. They're coming fast. I mean, you give Al Golden another year. I think Miami's a year, maybe two, from being at championship level. Florida State, obviously, to me, is a little ahead of the process as far as their recruiting classes they brought in. But the bottom line is you got a lot of these players tonight that are going to be going up against each other, know each other, with the high school each other, probably know each other for their entire lives. There will be no fear factor whatsoever when Miami takes on Florida State. Now, this is the biggest Miami is the biggest underdog that a top 10 team has ever been undefeated facing another top 10 team in the history of college football, in FBS history. Like no top 10, 22 point favorites is like that's a beatdown. It's three touchdowns. So that gives you a sense of people's, I think there's more of a perception of how Florida State is playing right now than it is anti-Miami. Florida State right now is playing, at a level, especially offensively, on both sides of the ball, but especially offensively. I mean, they're putting up over 50 points a game, and defensively, they're only giving them about 13 points a game defensively. So Florida State is white hot right now. Jameis Winston, right in the middle of the Heisman Trophy race with Mariota, and also of course Johnny Football. So they are, Florida State is a machine right now. And Miami is catching them at the wrong time. But again, should be an interesting game, to say the least. Again, I'll be shocked if Miami goes into Florida State and goes into Tallahassee and beats Florida State. But we've seen crazier things happen, let's be honest, in college football. So looking forward to it. Miami, Florida State, the battle, especially with Florida not being any good this year. This is the state championship of Florida. It also has ACC ramifications from the standpoint of these two teams could face twice. Even if Miami loses this game, they go on to beat Virginia Tech, then Miami would face Florida State more than likely in the ACC championship. Remember, Florida State basically has a two-game lead over Clemson, who they've already beaten handily. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Cyril Coleman Review. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review on this 2nd of November 2013. 347-215-6180 is your call number. This morning's headlines: Carl Pellini, of course, the head coach of Florida Atlantic, resigned earlier this week. And the reason why he resigned was he got caught using marijuana and coke. He was also fired. He got outed by the special teams coach. Also, the defensive coordinator Peter Rectis was also fired, as with fire as well. Just one of the stories, just you hear this kind of stuff, and it's just unreal from the standpoint of, you know, not the fact that he's smoking weed, but the fact that you're a head coach at in the Florida Atlantic. You know, remember, this Florida Atlantic basketball team, you know, went to the Sweet 16. So you're head coach of a Division I program, which is all those jobs are special jobs. I mean, there are only a couple hundred of them. You're head coach of a Division I program, and you throw your career away for some weed. Now, keep in mind, this is not like if you were like Lane Kiffin got fired from USC. So Lane Kiffin probably is going to have to go to a school like Florida Atlantic or somewhere like that, or FCS school to rebuild his career because he's been fired so many times. There's no, when you get fired, embarrassingly fired from a school like Florida Atlantic, you basically have to go back to, you know, Pop Warner to rebuild your career. There's no, like, you know, not even Division One, Division Two. Nobody in college, junior college, is going to touch you. Period. I mean, you're too much. First of all, he's not a great coach to begin with. His team was only in his career 5-15, so he's not like, you know, at least Lane Kiffin had some success, and his name is Kiffin. I mean, these two guys, especially Pelini. I mean, listen, maybe he's going to have to start from the bottom. And I mean the bottom of the football world, if he wants to ever get back into coaching college again. Yeah, I mean, he's doing, you know, he set his whole career back. So, again, yeah, a troublesome, disturbing story to say the least. A coach gets busted, for smoking weed. I mean, it's one of those things that you just shake your head at. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll have the Redskin report as RG3 has a rough week public relations wise for RG3. We'll talk about that. We'll preview the San Diego game as well. We'll be right back on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. 347-215-6180 is your call. I was just thinking about this as I'm watching game day here. How sweet is Alabama's schedule? Alabama. And I mean, listen, they're two-time defending champions. Still the team to beat. But they get a bye before they play Texas A&M and Johnny Manziel. Now they're going to get a bye before they play LSU next week. All right, like, that is... I can see the jealousy if you're another SEC team. I really can. I mean, first of all, the team wins all the time. That's number one. That's number one reason to be jealous. They get the best players. They got the best coach. And now they're getting all the best breaks. Having two byes before the two biggest games of your season, of your regular season, that's just, you know, hey, great to be kings. Listen, they're the champions, so I guess that's just how it goes. Redskin report Redskins coming to this game 2-5, coming to the San Diego game 2-5, and not the greatest week for the Washington Redskins, you know, off the field. And that's, they didn't even lose a game, and nobody got hurt. First of all, you have your wide receiver calling out your quarterback indirectly, with Pierre Garçon saying that the passing game sucks. Then you have Mike Shanahan, for some reason, going back and forth with a guy who's not even in the league anymore, Albert Haynesworth. I'm like, Mike, you know, like, Saint Mike, you have 2 Super Bowl rings. This guy is considered one of the worst free agent signings of all time. And by the way, which you had nothing to do with. You inherited. We acknowledge the fact that you inherited Albert Haynesworth. And Shanahan did not do a good job of handling that situation. But regardless of that, I don't put that on out. I don't put that. That's on Vinny Serrato. That's on Daniel Snyder, number one. But don't go back and forth with a guy. He's not in the league. I mean, come on. And then you have a couple stories coming out, one by Jason Reed and another by Sally Jenkins, basically calling out RG3. I mean, the Jason Reed column, it said, you know, questioned whether or not RG3 will ever be an elite quarterback, considering the fact that he's not, that his accuracy is bad right now. And which I think is unfair, considering coming off to, and I'll get to that. But the Sally Jenkins article was more, you know, was a more telling of what the Redskins locker room could be looking like right now, as far as could there be questions of dissension within the locker room? Like, you know, is Robert Griffin, you know, has he secretly turned into a prima donna? You know, is he respected in that locker room? I mean, those are fair questions to be asked right now. Jenkins basically called Griffin out for, you know, basically taking a leadership role when he hasn't fully earned that through 22 games of a career. Some of it is fair. I think as a quarterback, you almost have to assert yourself, because if you don't, then people will be calling you out saying that, why are you not speaking up when things are not going good? So he's in a tough spot from that standpoint, but they're also, you know, he's only a second-year guy. He's not, you know, he's one rookie a year. He's not as accomplished as, you know, as some of these other great quarterbacks in the league. So that's, you know, do people within that locker room look to him as a leader? That's the question in terms of his leadership. Will all the players follow him? Think about what the media thinks. It's about the players inside that locker room. If the majority of those players are following him, then, yeah, he is a leader. But if you have groups and factions in that locker room that kind of, like, look at him like, you know, dude, you know, shut up. You haven't accomplished anything. You're playing terrible this year. Why are you speaking? Then, yeah, I understand, totally understand what Sally Jenkins is saying. The big question to me in regards to RG3 should be this, in terms of what's going on the field. Are the Redskins, Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan specifically, are they setting him back by now allowing him to do what he wants to do, and that is run the football and not be purely a pocket passer? That's the big question that should be asked. Are they setting him back? Because it's like this. It's like eventually he's going to have to develop that skill set of being a pocket passer, and being a pocket passer for him to go to the next level. All the great quarterbacks in NFL history are pocket passers. Maybe they didn't start out that way. But they develop into that if they're going to become Hall of Fame caliber, just great, great players. I mean, Steve Young is a poster child to me of a guy who was not a pocket passer. Jerry Rice hated him because of some of the stuff Young used to do early in his career. But, you know, Young over time developed into one of the most accurate and one of the most – Steve Young retired as the highest-rated quarterback in NFL history. So are you better off? Now, again, here's the dilemma. Because if you're Mike Shanahan, you need wins the way RG3 is playing right now as far as running the ball might give you the best chance to win games right now in 2013. But long term, next year, 2 years going, looking beyond, looking in the future, it might be setting RG3's his development back. Because, again, eventually he's going to have to be able to beat people from the pocket. And this year, he's been awful in the pocket. He's been indecisive. He hasn't been accurate. He's had happy feet. His pocket presence has been bad. So, but again, are you like, I mean, it's a tough call. I mean, you're a coach. You got to win games. You're not thinking about 5 years from now. But again, his development to me still is the most important thing on this team is how RG3 develops as a quarterback. That's the most, that is still the most important single aspect of the organization. I mean, this guy is not only the face of the franchise. I mean, he is the franchise. I mean, let's be honest. I don't know. It's a team sport. I get it. But he is the franchise. And getting back to that talk, that possible dissension in the locker room, you wonder if all the talk in the offseason about his knee and just all the focus that was on him, you wonder if that just kind of rubbed some guys the wrong way in that locker room. Yeah, it's just a thought. I mean, you wonder if that's carrying over from the summertime for a guy who frankly didn't go to training camp, didn't go through some of the team and chemistry building things that football players go through together in terms of the workouts and what have you. And again, none of it's his fault. He was hurt, he was injured, he was rehabbing, but still, there's still a bonding process over the course of the offseason, especially when teams get into OTAs, preseason, training camp, and when your best player, when your franchise is not a part of that, and then comes out and says, you know, I'm the leader of this team, and you know, says I take care of any cancers, that can rub a guy, that can rub some players the wrong way. It can, especially veterans. But Pierre Garçon should not be speaking about indirectly or directly about the passing game. He's not a good enough player. He's not Calvin Johnson. He's not Randy Moss. He's just not good. He's a number three receiver, number two at best on a good team. He's not on that level to make those kind of comments whatsoever. So again, this is the type of stuff that happens when your team is 2-5. I guarantee you, the Redskins were 5-2. We wouldn't be talking about any of this. Again, we wouldn't be talking about any of this stuff. The Redskins were 5-2. So, this week, of course, Redskins take on San Diego. San Diego flying cross country, so the Redskins have an advantage from that standpoint. It's an early kickoff, so historically in the last few years, West Coast teams, even the ones that play off caliber like Seattle, have struggled with that East Coast time, that East Coast early starting time. Something that the Redskins should absolutely take advantage of. But they're catching San Diego coming off a bye. San Diego is playing good football right now, having coming in at 4-3. Phillip Rivers looks like the Phillip Rivers we saw 2 or 3 years ago, and where he was headed to becoming a legit top 10, top 5 quarterback. He's playing great right now, second highest rated passer behind Peyton Manning in the league. They come in with their San Diego's defense has been improved. They're running the football. They don't look like the San Diego teams we've seen in the past, where, you know, they find ways to lose games. It does not look like that so far. So this is going to be a tough matchup for the Redskins because, again, Phillip Rivers is a guy that can just light you up. And Antonio Gates played well, back to playing at a Pro Bowl level. And you're going against a secondary that will get back Brandon Merriweather, whatever that means. I mean, he's a body. I'll put you that way. And that's as much as I'll say about Brandon Merriweather. But going up against a susceptible secondary that the Redskins have, you wonder if the Redskins could get away with putting D'Angelo Hall on Antonio Gates. Wonder if you'll see that. But, again, I'm looking at the Redskins defense. The guy who's got to stand up and have a big game is Brian Arakpo. Kerrigan so far, Kerrigan has played great this year. You know, not only with the sacks, but with just forcing fumbles, making plays, tipping passes. He's been all over the place. Brian Rifo, I know he's only, forget about the sack numbers, only has 3 sacks, but it's not even about the sacks. It's just about he has not impacted these games whatsoever. You know, Brian Rifo, you know, I know he's been a Pro Bowl a couple times. At a certain point, Brian Rifo has to put his imprint on some of these games. I mean, if Brian Rifo became the player which we knew he could become, the Redskins would have one of the best pass rush combos in the league. Easily. Because if I'm a team game plan to stop the Redskins defensive line, I'm game planning to stop Ryan. I'm double teaming Ryan Kerrigan. I will single cover Brian Rifo and say, I dare him to beat me right now because he is not playing well. So, again, it's going to be a tough game for the Redskins. Obviously, a game that they need to have to somewhat keep pace in the division. Again, at some point, and I know the division is bad. At some point, you got to start winning some games. I know Dallas is 500. I know Philly's only 3-5. Giants are just a half game behind the Redskins at 2-6, starting to get some momentum, starting to play well. They're about to embark on a 3-game homestand, basically, which is all three are very winnable games. Well, 2 of the 3. I don't think they have beaten Green Bay, but 2 of the 3 are very much winnable games, so they could be coming on. So, but at some point, the Redskins are going to have to start winning some games if they want to have any thoughts of being in the division, in the playoff race, which means being in the division title race. They're not making the playoffs. No team outside a division winner is making the playoffs in the NFC East. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll put a bow on the Major League Baseball season. The Boston Red Sox, of course, world champs. We'll talk about that coming up on this last edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review as we 347-215-6180, 29 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour. Of course, the Major League Baseball season has wrapped up on Wednesday evening with the Boston Red Sox taking home yet another championship, their eighth in their history, their third championship in 10 years. They're now fourth all time in terms of total champion, in terms of championships, only trail the Yankees, Cardinals, and the Oakland A's, and the Oakland A's combination with the Philadelphia A's as well. So they are now at the top end of baseball history in terms of franchises in their history. How many championships would they have? Had they not traded Babe Ruth? I mean, my goodness, that's where they won. You know, won a number of their first ones. But you know, it is what it is. But this Boston team it is just a tough mentally tough bunch of guys. I mean, think about Boston. This postseason run they had. Now they basically were in control of the Tampa Bay series. They got up 2-0. You know, lost game 3, which wasn't a big deal. Closed it out in 4 games. But you know, that Detroit series, they were absolutely on the ropes. I mean, Detroit comes in, takes game one. Game two, they're down. Game two, you know, they're down four runs. You know, before they're down 5-1 before Ortiz hits that grand slam, which was easily. And there were a lot of big hits in this postseason, a few big hits in this postseason. But by far, the biggest hit in the postseason, not for Boston, but for any team. That home run changed the complexion of the series. I mean, who knows? You know, they did not win that series. They don't win the championship. They're not even in the World Series if Boston, if Ortiz doesn't hit that home run. That's how big it was. They're going, you know, to win that series, going to win that game, win that series. You know, they in game three, you have in Lackey. You know, Detroit still has an advantage because they have home field, having Lackey against Verlander. Whoever thought that John Lackey would outpitch Justin Verlander and beat him in a 1-0 game? I mean, there's no way going to that game. And again, Lackey was just tremendous in that game. Then you get to the World Series, win game one. Again, Lackey pitches well, but Walker's better in game two. Lose game three, of course, I shouldn't even say controversy, but lose game three on the obstruction call. No problem, despite the fact that in games three and four, you had two guys who probably, if you combined them, didn't get you nine innings of baseball in terms of PV and Buckles, but two guys that kept the Red Sox in the games enough to get to the St. Louis bullpen and win, and allow them to win both games. I mean, PV again. If you told me PV that they were going to be dependent on PV and Buckles. Okay, PV and Buckholz in critical game three and four. I told you, you know, they're going to be down 3-1 coming home at 1-1. So just an amazing postseason run for the Red Sox. Again, you know, John Lester, Big Poppy, the Red Sox bullpen. The formula does not change in baseball when it comes to these postseasons. You get clutch hitting, you get dominant, you get good starting pitching, and it has become recently dominant bullpens. Look at the three teams that have dominated baseball in the postseason in the last 10 years. You had the Red Sox with three championships. You have St. Louis with two championships. You had the San Francisco Giants with two championships. All three of those teams have quality starting pitching and a dominant, and I mean dominant bullpen. That is more important than the offense. Neither one of these teams hit well in the World Series because the pitching was so good. To win a championship in baseball, your bullpen either has to get hot or you just have to have a great bullpen in order to win a title. And St. Louis won, we'll be talking about all those young arms they have in their bullpen. And Michael Walker and guys of that nature. So Boston is the champions. I'm sure Yankee fans are thrilled. but not a great World Series in terms of quality games. It was very sloppy. Some of the errors that were made and mistakes that were made by two very good teams. But the thing you liked about this World Series, number one, you had some great pitching, you had some compelling games, you had some good moments, but you had the two best teams, and it's very rare in this day and time with, you know, the parity in baseball that you get the two best teams playing for the championship. It doesn't happen that often in baseball. Basketball happens all the time for the most part, but in baseball it doesn't happen very often, but it certainly was the case in this particular year where you had the two best teams in baseball. So that's going to wrap up the baseball season. Of course, we'll be talking about free agency as the hot stove heats up. Robinson Cano, Jacob Ellsbury, just to name a few. Matt Garza, free agents, just to name a few. Napoli and Lester are going to be back in Boston come next year. So there are a ton of free agents, especially starting pitchers. I mean, will David, the biggest story in terms of, to me, is will David Price be traded from Tampa Bay? Because they're not going to pay him. They're not going to pay him. They think they can develop pitchers. They should pay him, but they're not. So that's going to be a major story. Derek Jeter signs with the Yankees, probably his last season, 2014, for $12 million. He had a player option for $8.5 million, and they signed for $12 million. That's basically a thank you. Thank you for Derek Jeter for all your years of service because, you know, based on his injuries, based on the year he had last year and how, based on the fact that he's going, you know, going to be turning 40, that was very generous of the Yankees. But, again, Jeter's earned it. He is a Hall of Famer. He has been, you know, the face of the franchise for almost 20 years now. It'll be his 19th year, amazingly. So, it'll be his last year, I would think. I can't see Derek Jeter playing in another uniform. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Coming up, week number 9. In the league where no contract is guaranteed. We'll have NFL picks that's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. In a league where no contract is guaranteed. 3 games, and trust me, I searched long and hard for these 3 games. It's tough. It's not a good weekend. It is not a good NFL Sunday, good NFL schedule. And that's that, I mean, to say the least. But it's a dirty job. Somebody had to do it. We start off in the Big Apple, MetLife Stadium, the Jets taking on the high-flying Saints, led by, of course, by Drew Breesy. New Orleans comes into this game playing well, 6.5-point favorites, and rightfully so. I'm surprised the line isn't higher, but 6.5 points on the road even, you know, speaks a lot, especially to a team where you're a 500 team, playing a 500 team, which the Jets are. Jets come in off a woodshed special loss to the Cincinnati Bengals, and 49-9. This, to me, is a classic case of a bounce back. We know the Saints are a much better team than the Jets, on paper, off paper, on computer, all like that's the numbers. You want to compare stats, quarter? No two ways about it. I couldn't debate that if I were the most staunch Jet fan, biggest Jet fan in the world. But NFL players, these teams have pride. The Saints, when they've been suspect, have been suspect away from the on the road, outdoors. I expect a bounce back performance by the Jets. I think they'll be able to run the ball against the Saints. I think they'll be able to somewhat keep Drew Brees off the field. They might be able to turn him over a couple times, considering that nobody has had great success running the ball against the Jets. So maybe Drew Brees gets pass happy, which is not the worst thing, because he's Drew Brees. But I expect the Jets to be in this game. New Orleans wins, but the Jets cover the Jets cover. Game number two, Pittsburgh traveling down to Gillette, take on the Tom Brady-led New England Patriots. The line on this game, again, like the Jets, Saints, is 6.5. And it's probably about right. I'm surprised it's not even that. I'm surprised it's not even higher, considering how much New England, how much that Pittsburgh is struggling to score. But you have to take into consideration that the Patriots are also a team that struggles to score. You have two quarterbacks who have combined 5 Super Bowls, but are playing like guys who haven't won 5 games in their careers. I mean, you got two guys who are badly struggling, in Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger. Pittsburgh cannot run the football. New England, frankly, right now can't throw the football. But New England has the home field. They're dominant. They've been great in that stadium, coming off a good win against Miami and a nice comeback win against Miami. I think Pittsburgh is finished. I think, you know, losing to Oakland showed you that Pittsburgh will not be a factor in terms of making the playoffs this year. I like New England to cover the spread, not only to win the game, but to cover. I would say 21-10, New England wins going away. Game number three, down Green Bay, Chicago, in Lambeau Field, Monday night. The line is 10.5, a lot of points. Now, I know Green Bay is playing good football right now, but they're still banged up with the receivers. James Jones could play, but even if he does, it'll probably be a game-time decision. Even if he does play, I don't know how many plays he'll play. I don't know how effective he'll be coming off the injury. Josh McCown has actually played well for the Bears. And the Bears still have Matt Forte. This is a divisional rivalry game. I know Green Bay has owned Chicago of late, but I think Green Bay, Chicago keeps this game close. I like Green Bay to win. But I like Chicago to cover. Take Green Bay to win, but take Chicago with the points. So, 3 games, Jets, New Orleans to win, but the Jets with the points. I like New England outright to cover and to win the game. And I'll take Chicago with the points, but Green Bay to win the game. That is a week 9 picks in the league where no contract is guaranteed. We'll be right back on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. After the 9 o'clock hour in this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, 2 disturbing NFL stories. First, Justin Blackmon, the talented but choice troubled Jacksonville Jaguars wide receiver, suspended indefinitely for a violation of the substance abuse program of the NFL. Remember, Blackmon was suspended for the first 4 games of this season, and despite that, he was having a tremendous year. For one, of course, worst teams in all of football. Like Jacksonville needed any more injuries or somebody, a prominent player of his magnitude, to get to not be able to play. Just needs to get his life together. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's not even about football right now. He needs to get his life in order before he's out of football. But then the second one is not only disturbing, but just, you know, strange. Jonathan Martin, the offensive tackle of the Miami Dolphins, walked out of the team facilities. This was due to a prank that happened during during lunch in the cafeteria, and the NFL Players Association is investigating it for bullying. He has not returned since, citing, you know, he has some mental issues and anxiety. It's a mental issue here. It's not the injury. He hasn't been injured. So, this is one of the strangest stories I've ever seen in the NFL. Bullying has become prominent, you know, in schools. It's prominent, you know, even in the workplace to a lesser extent. But bullying in the NFL locker room, there are some certain things I never thought I would see, and this is one of them, I have to admit. I mean, this guy is 6'5", 320 pounds. He's an All-American at Stanford, second-round pick last year in the 2012 draft. And apparently the guy who's behind this, or was it played a prominent role in this, Richie Incognito, a guy who early in his career was considered to be one of the dirtiest players in all of football, but now in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years has really cleaned up his act. Is on a number of committees on the team and within the league. Again, he's being sought after. He's considered to be the main culprit of this, apparently. Again, I don't know what exactly happened. Still has not come out. But apparently, it was a prank. It was a prank that went wrong, to say the least. And again, this is this is something I've never thought that bullying would just even remotely have a chance to exist in the NFL. It's one of those stories that you think you've seen it all, you've seen a lot, and just something like this comes along. But again, strange, but yet still a disturbing, story. You know, the NFL, between the concussions, between the Redskins between the Redskins, you know, name, the NFL doesn't need this whatsoever. Substance abuse is one thing. That's been going on for a while. You know, NFL suspends, you know, that and keeps it moving. But this right here, you can't have bullying in the NFL. I mean, it just can't happen. I'm not making fun of it. It's just, you know, NFL doesn't need any more public relations issues. I'm sure Roger Goodell is just scratching his head right now over this. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk NBA basketball, the opening week of the NBA. Of course, it's kicked off. We'll talk some NBA basketball that's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
a little Brothers Johnson on this Saturday morning, 51 minutes after the 9 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Serial Cooler Review, as we discuss the world of sports, 347-215-6180, your call number. NBA season, of course, kicking off. Yeah, Chicago. Yeah, Miami taking care of business against Chicago. Derrick Rose, you know, looks rusty, and to be expected. You know, he's, you know, missed the entire season. So, you know, he'll be fine. Just having a hard time finishing plays right now. How about the Sixers? Did somebody remind the Sixers that this could be one of the best drafts in 20 years? No, I guess they didn't get that memo, because the over, and if you don't know the backstory to this, the over and under for the Sixers was at 16.5, which is the lowest, maybe the lowest in about 12 years in terms of victories. They've already won two games. They're already 2-0. If you had told me the Sixers, looking at this team, I would have told you that the Sixers wouldn't get win number two prior to like late December, early January. So they're going to win more than 16 games. It looks like it. Michael Carter Williams had a nice opening night. Darius Young had a big game last night. So, you know, we'll see what the Sixers do. Again, this is without Nolan's Noel. I mean, he'll come back soon, and we'll see what happens with this Sixer team. But again, off to a fast start at 2-0. Great game, great matchup Thursday between the Clippers and Golden State. Both these two teams hate each other for whatever reason. I don't know how this became a rivalry. Neither one of them has won anything, and they haven't been in the playoffs. So, but apparently they wouldn't have before the game. They wouldn't be in the same chapel apparently before the game, or you know, in the same, they were staying at the hotel. And it was just some crazy story with that. But on the court, you know, Clippers took care of business 126-115 as Chris Paul had 42-15. Steph Curry, 38-9. Tremendous point guard matchup with those two going at it. They'll be battling out for divisional supremacy without question in the Pacific, with the Lakers being down this year. Lakers, of course, you know, fell last night to San Antonio, 91-85. No Tim Duncan, no Kobe Bryant. So unless you just I had nothing else to do as far as sports world. That was not a game to watch, certainly. Good game last night in Brooklyn. Brooklyn getting by Miami 101-100. Probably shouldn't have been that hard, to be honest with you. That's an early concern. I mean early concern about Brooklyn in watching that game. I mean, they match up with Miami very well. They can hurt Miami in a lot of spots. Their bench was tremendous in that game. Even guys that I didn't even anticipate would have an impact, like, you know, Anthony Anderson or Allen Anderson and Sean Livingston. I mean, they are a deep basketball team, and they will serve them right considering some of the age, Garnett and Pierce and Kirilenko, that they have on that team. But, they, you know, and this is something that can develop over time. Who's the closer on that team in late game situations, especially in the fourth quarter? Because that to me is what got Miami back into that game, was the fact that, you know, who do you give the ball to? I mean, I know Joe Johnson hit some big shots. Paul Pierce, hit a couple of big shots, but there's not. And again, it's game number two. They right now they don't have a definitive closer on that team. Now, it should be Darren Williams and Paul Pierce. I mean, those should be the two guys that you know, had the ball in their hands that you trust making plays right now. But Darren Williams, you know, do you completely trust Darren Williams with his shot selection and decision making? Probably not. So probably the safe bet for now would be to say Paul Pierce. Excellent passer, can make free throws, can make big shots. You know, you really could run it through Paul Pierce and also Brook Lopez, who is a big man who can make free throws. But again, my point is, I just mentioned three guys, and we just don't know who that guy or those guys are going to be. But again, they have plenty of time to get that worked out. But they do get the win 101-100. Miami kind of going through the motions these first couple of games. I don't know. They get up for the Chicago game, which you knew they would, ring night, trying to prove a point to Chicago. But lose a shocking game to the Sixers. Even for, you know, in Miami last season, if you remember, lost a ton of games early in the season that maybe had you scratching your head. Losing to the Wizards, you know, lost to the Wizards. But, you know, they eventually got together, as we all know, with the win with the championship and also the 27-game win streak. So I wouldn't put too much emphasis on Miami losing these early games. They're clearly going to protect Dwayne Wade this year with the knee situation. He's not going to play. He is not going to play in a lot of these back in some of these back-to-backs, depending on who the team is. Four games in 5 nights, things of that nature. They're going to make sure that Dwayne Wade is fresh going into the postseason, and rightfully so. You have to put Dwayne Wade basically on that Tim Duncan schedule. I mean, that's all it is. That's where he's at in his career. Even though he should be, you know, at age 31, 32, should still relatively be in his prime, but physically he's taken a beating over the course of his career. So this is where he's at right now. Oklahoma City gets embarrassed by Minnesota, their biggest loss in 3 years. Russell Westbrook cannot come back soon enough. So there you go with the NBA. Of course, earlier this week, Allen Iverson officially announced his retirement. He hadn't played since, I believe, 2011. I think 2011 he hadn't played in the NBA. Played overseas for a year or so. Again, one of the toughest guys, one of the great scorers in NBA history. Career average of 26.7, tremendous offensive player, fearless. Think about the team he took to the finals in 2001. You're talking about Aaron McKee, George Lynch, Theo Ratliff. I mean, they had traded Theo Ratliff, Dikembe Mutombo. I mean, that was Eric Snow. I mean, that, again, one of the most underrated accomplishments in recent NBA memory for that team to get to the NBA Finals over a team that was talent-laden in Milwaukee. I remember Milwaukee had Ray Allen, Tim Fassell, and Glenn Robinson on that 2001 team. There's no way from a talent standpoint, that Philadelphia was supposed to beat that Milwaukee team, but it did happen. And Tim Thomas was coming off the bench. Don't forget about that. So, but it did happen. And Allen Iverson, without question, this should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't care about what off the field. And we're talking about basketball here. We're not talking about a guy, you know, we're not talking about a guy who's supposed to be there are a lot of people who are not great people who are in the Halls of Fame in all sports. It's not about that. It's about performance. Ty Cobb is in the Hall of Fame. And anybody knows Ty Cobb was a terrible person. So, you know, it's about performance on the field. And talking about performance on the field, you can't deny what Allen Iverson did and what he meant for the city of Philadelphia. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be back in a couple of days to do the latest edition of the NFL show. Have a great, great weekend. I'll see you next time.